Hi, this is Cole Silver, and welcome to another edition of the Rain Dancing Expert Audio Series. You know, whether you're a seasoned attorney or a newbie, you have to constantly brand and reinvent yourself. And if you want to implement a marketing plan that is in alignment with your personal style and one that's going to work in the marketplace, there is no better coach than our next guest. Sally Schmidt is the president of Schmidt Marketing in St. Paul, Minnesota, which offers marketing services and products to law firms. The company's consulting clients have included over 400 law firms throughout the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Europe, New Zealand, and Australia, ranging in size from 2 to over 3,000 attorneys. Ms. Schmidt obtained her MBA in marketing and BF from the University of Minnesota and was formerly the Director of Client Relations and Marketing for a 100-attorney firm. She was founder and the first president of the Legal Marketing Association and was inducted into their Hall of Fame in 2007, receiving its Lifetime Achievement Award. A fellow in the College of Law Practice Management, Sally has made presentations at more than 200 national and international seminars and conferences for the legal profession, and her articles have been published in every major legal trade publication. She is also the author of two books, Business Development for Lawyers, Strategies for Getting and Keeping Clients, and Marketing the Law Firm, Business Development Techniques. Welcome, Sally. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, a lot of people, marketing experts, do talk about benchmarking, research, due diligence, and other things in order to get your strategy honed in and differentiate yourself from the rest of the crowded legal marketplace. Can you talk about benchmarking and how important it is?
Sure. Well, benchmarking, I think, is important for a couple of reasons. One is in order for you to track your progress. You start right now by, you know, assessing maybe your market share or, you know, in terms of what you have, so you know areas for improvement. Maybe it's something like the number of deals that you've handled or number of IP patent filings or the percentage of the top 25 contractors you represent in the state, things like that. So I think what we want to do is sort of establish what is our today number so that we can see if our marketing efforts are working, which is very important. I have to say one of the biggest failings I think a lot of individual lawyers as well as firms make is just not being able to track the success of their marketing efforts. They sort of talk about, we're doing a lot of things, but we just don't really know if it's working. And I always tell them, you should figure out a way to measure. So establishing some sort of benchmark, and that depends, of course, a lot on what it is you're trying to accomplish, I think is very important. I also think benchmarking, in some respects, gives you some opportunities to hone your marketing message. So if you figure out that you work with more franchisors than anybody else in the state, that's something you can tell people. And anytime you can use numbers in your marketing, it's very effective. Clients, they like to know how many other people like them you've worked with or how many similar types of deals or how many matters that have gone to trial, that type of thing. So I think that whole process of figuring out where you stand vis-a-vis yourself as well as others is really an important part of your marketing.
When you talk about benchmarking and internal analytics, are most of your clients in terms of the law firms that you represent, are they good at keeping those types of analytics, and what could they do better? I mean, because I've had many, many business clients over the years, and when I sit in business meetings, the amount of data on what they do, the targeted EBITDA, whatever it is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Are law firms just now catching up with that?
I don't think they're catching up. I think they're far behind, and they're trying to make progress, but we're not even close to catching up. I think part of it is that for some reason, which has always befuddled me a little bit, lawyers really like to talk about precedent when it comes to legal matters, but they really don't like to look back very much when it comes to other things. So it's always been hard for me to convince lawyers to take a lot of time and effort to analyze, just to say, where have we been, how many of these have we handled, you know, where have our clients come from. They're always sort of looking to the next matter. So we you know, part of it is just that objection. Part of it is that we haven't had historical information. Law firms have done a very poor job. And, of course, again, now they've got better systems and people are paying attention to it. But they have not really tracked even the kind of information that they want to keep. So when I go in and work with a practice group, for example, or even an individual lawyer on his or her bio, and I tell them the most important thing you can do is try to identify what you've worked on before, you know, have some sort of a deal list or representative matters, things that we can either quantify or at least, you know, put sort of qualitative little scenarios down, things like that. They have never captured that information. So I think that really firms have not done a very good job. And one of the things that I try to do, for example, when I work with a practice group right off the bat is I'll say, let's measure everything. I mean, you can always argue about whether it's the right measurement, but as long as we do it consistently from year to year, you know, then we'll be able to at least see, do we think we're doing better than we would have done without the marketing effort? So we'll measure things like, you know, how many timekeepers are in the group and how many matters they handled and how many hours were billed and how many, you know, clients they have and how many lawyers are in chambers from the group and how many are super lawyers. And everything we can measure, we measure in terms of dollars and numbers. And that way, you know, we put on a big grid. We'll try to do it for maybe 3 years looking back. And then as we go forward, we can see, you know, are we above the sort of the trend line that we had before we really had a good strategic marketing campaign?
You know, some of the more successful firms that I've worked with recently are starting to bring in CFO and technology experts to capture a lot of the analytics that you spoke about, because, you know, the old joke is that people that are poor at math go to law school, and maybe, you know, lawyers are just not suited to put that data together.
Well, that and, you know, the other thing that they say about lawyers is they like to look at all sides and, you know, a good argument is always fun. And so no matter how you come up with data, I find that everybody argues about whether it's the right way to look at it. And so it's very hard to get them to agree on what's an accurate measurement. And is, you know, even something like the profitability of practices, which, of course, is an extremely important number to track, everybody will talk about, well, are we including the right costs and, you know, why should government relations have to pay any of the library expenses? We don't use the library. And, you know, they're always kind of arguing about what's in and what's out. And so that's part of it. But you're right. They're starting to bring in people, and they're also starting to bring in other resources. Redwood Analytics, for example, is a company I just found out last week, I think, acquired by Lexis. But they have a software product that sits on all of the other software within a law firm and is able to start to crunch numbers, whether it's, you know, client retention numbers, practice area profitability, things like that.
If you're going to do any kind of analytics, I would suspect that the baseline would be client analytics, knowing where, you know, the majority of your revenues come from, know if you're getting upselling or referrals. Can you talk about the kind of systems and help that you, you know, implement with your clients with regard to client analytics?
Sure. Well, I don't get involved in actually helping with the systems, but what I try to do is give them ideas for how they should be looking at that information and, if possible, working with either their accounting department or their IT people and helping them understand how we'd like to look at the data. For example, cross-selling. You know, people, every firm I work with talks about wanting to expand their relationships with existing clients and how do we get more services used, et cetera. So one of the things that you want to look at is how many services they're using now. And so, you know, whether it's just some sort of an analysis, we call like a gap analysis, I'll ask the people inside the firm to produce something on top clients that shows what dollars or what percentage of a client's receipts are coming from each of the practice areas of the firm. From there, we can see then if there are, you know, gaps or complete areas where we're not getting any work that might be potential new business opportunities, or we'll just run some numbers so we have averages, or again, we have the benchmark. So, you know, company XYZ that's a very good client uses right now 6 services of the firm. We're going to implement a client team, and then one of our goals is to try to expand the number of services that they use. We'll be able to measure that and see where we get good results. So it's really on the front end, talking with them about clients, you know, where the business is coming from, how much of the business they're already getting, which we call the share of the client, which sometimes even comes just in a conversation with the client, try to get a sense of what their legal budget is and how much of it they're sending to the firm, look at, you know, what services they're using, how many dollars, all of that stuff.
With respect to tracking marketing efforts you spoke about before, what are the more effective ways of doing that? I mean, if you're going to do a direct mail campaign or even put up a billboard, is it just a cost-benefit analysis as to finding out how that particular prospect came into your office?
Well, that's such a good question. I have been talking about trying to measure marketing return for many, many years, because I don't think people often understand that you can measure everything. It's just that it can't always be measured in terms of new business. So if we run an ad campaign, the first part of the process is figuring out what our objective is. You know, why are we doing it in the first place? And if someone were to say to me, well, we're going to run this image ad because we'd like to increase our business, I'd say to them, that's probably not going to be a direct effect. It's, you know, it's maybe not a bad idea. You're trying to increase your visibility. You want more people to think of you, or you want to be top of mind, but not many people are going to call when they see an image ad. And in fact, probably nobody. So I would say, you know, let's talk about what's realistic. And in that case, it's probably either to change people's perceptions of the firm, increase the amount of name recognition, you know, just increase overall awareness. Those are very fair things to measure. Now, once you figure out that's what we're measuring, then you can figure out how to do it. For example, let's say some firm is going to invest in a public radio campaign. Well, we'll go to the public radio station. We'll say to them, give us a list of your patrons or members. Have the firm maybe do some sort of a very quick but statistically significant survey where you call randomly selected people on the list and you ask them, you know, give me the names of the law firms that are top of mind for you. Now I'm going to read some law firm names, and you include the firm's name and see, do you know, have you heard of these firms before? And then maybe for those that they've heard of, whether it was prompted or unprompted, you say, give me a couple of words that you would use to describe them. And that's the end of the survey, and it's very quick, and it gives you, again, the benchmark, you know, how many people have heard of the firm unprompted, how many have recognized the firm of the name when it's mentioned, and what is it that they think about the firm. Then after you do your ad campaign, whether it's a year or 18 months or 2 years, you do the same survey again, and now you're going to know whether you've had increases in top-of-mind awareness as well as recognition, as well as are they saying the things about us that we said in the ad. So, you know, I think it's really important to try to measure virtually everything that you do in marketing. It's just how you do it changes.
So a lot of times in law firms, you'll see these marketing folks who sort of run the gamut of people who can throw a good party to mm-hmm. people who are good at putting collateral material together to others who, you know, may be good at analytics, just as you described. But a recent article I found said that the average lifespan of an in-house legal marketing officer is less than 2 years. It doesn't seem to be a long-term position. Why is that?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. Now, overall, for marketing people in law firms, the lifespan has gone up. But as we've gotten these more senior people, the chief marketing officers, if you look at just them, they haven't been doing this very long, so that's one reason. They're kind of a new thing for law firms, and I think a lot of firms have maybe unrealistic expectations of what someone at that level will do. So people leave either because they're frustrated, they've been promised that they're going to get to do strategic thinking, for example, when in fact the firm wants them to organize seminars, or they want to do strategic thinking and then they find out they only have 1.5 staff people in a 400 lawyer firm, and so they're spending all their time putting labels on envelopes or something. So they get frustrated. In some cases, the firms get frustrated, or I should say not the firms, but there's usually maybe a core of supporters who understand, you know, how important it is to have somebody looking at marketing from a strategic perspective, but then you have the rest of the firm. And the other lawyers don't quite see the value because this person doesn't deliver like newsletters or, you know, make changes to their bio on the website. They just don't have the real tangible deliverables that the people on the staff have, because what they do is really more, you know, thinking about how the firm should be positioning itself and prospective clients and target markets and things like that. And I also think another reason people leave, and it's not insignificant, is just opportunity. There are amazing opportunities for people that are good law firm marketers. We do a number of searches every year. I think we had 14 placements in 2007. And you can't keep up with the demand. It's just absolutely amazing. If you go to the Legal Marketing Association website, I think they have close to 200 jobs posted right now around the country. So people are finding they have a lot of opportunities, and if they're not happy where they are, or if they aren't happy with their salary, they have a lot of chances to look around.
Do you prefer when you work with a client to have an internal in-house marketing department help you, or do you prefer to sort of strategize and implement on an external basis alone?
Well, I guess it depends a little on the nature of the in-house department. I really like it when I can partner with an in-house either marketing person or a marketing department, because the fact of the matter is I'm not going to be there to implement. You know, that's not my role. So I like to go in and work with some people, help them understand, you know, to the extent I can, what we're trying to accomplish or what I've been asked to do, because they're the ones that have to see it through, and I'm going to be more effective if there are people on the ground there that can get things done. I have worked with many, many firms that don't have the in-house legal staff, and if that's the case, or I'm sorry, marketing staff, and if that's the case, then we almost always try to talk about, you know, how are we going to make sure there's some accountability moving forward. So when I walk away, I've given recommendations, we've talked about, you know, follow-up activities. There's somebody who's responsible for seeing that it gets done. And frequently that'll be an administrator or executive director. In some cases they might take a paralegal or somebody like that. In some cases it's a partner. They call the marketing partner and put in charge of that. But almost always it helps to have somebody on the ground in marketing.
Do you find that a lot of firms drop the ball after you've left the engagement?
Yes. I would say I like to think that almost all of them do something, but I think the percentage that do everything we talked about is probably pretty low. You know, because when I come out with, let's just say one of my typical engagements is what I call a marketing audit. I'm asked to come in, sort of take a look at what the firm has been doing, what its opportunities are, who its clients are, and then I'll give recommendations and I'll say, and some of them are internal, how to structure the process, how to do a better job of responding to RFPs, for example. Some of it's external in terms of, you know, what targets to go after or how to, in some cases, you know, setting up specific targets that we're going to try to get people to go call on. And, you know, I don't know. I follow up a little bit, but I don't know to what extent they actually always implement everything. I think it's, again, pretty low. But there are always some people that are inspired to do something, and what I find is if there isn't somebody in charge in-house, they tend to call back a year later or 2 years later saying, okay, we need you back again.
So tell me, you know, you've been doing this a long time, and you are very engaged in all of the associations involving legal marketing. How'd you come around to pick lawyers as your niche?
Well, they kind of picked me. I actually had I have a kind of a funny story about how I got involved in legal marketing. I used to be a French teacher, and I decided teaching was not for me. So I went back and I worked in the Department of Economics at the University of Minnesota, and I was working because I worked at the U. I got a chance to work on my MBA free of charge. They have something called the Regent Scholarship for people who work at the U full time. So I finished up my degree, and I knew I wanted to get into the private sector, and I started looking in the paper for ads, and it was the time, 1984. It wasn't very easy to find a job at that time. And I had, while I was going to school, also worked at a store called McNeil and Purnell, and I worked in their office services, just kind of, you know, helping ring up sales, things like that. Well, what happened was the law firm, I saw a little ad in the paper. It said professional services firm seeks marketing director, so I sent my resume because I had an MBA in marketing. Well, they saw that I'd worked at a place called McNeil and Purnell, and they thought it was a law firm. And it was a clothing store. So anyway, that's the only reason they invited me in for the interview, which I thought was pretty funny. But when I had the interview, we really hit it off. And we were sort of joking about the Hart, Schaffner and Marx law firm and other places like that. But that was how I got the entree. And in fact, I was just talking to somebody yesterday about the fact that I also know that I wasn't their first choice. They had another person that they had interviewed for the job, and they made him an offer, and he turned him down. So I was just in the right place at the right time and had kind of a funny turn of events and ended up going to work as a marketing director for O'Connor and Hannon here in Minneapolis. And I did that for about 3.5 years, and I absolutely loved it.
I can't leave this alone. Just one more question. What is it that you love about working with lawyers?
Well, I love a lot of things about it. I love the fact that I'm working with very, very smart people who challenge a lot of things. I love the fact that they are very anti-marketing jargon, because I tend to be a person who's pretty much a straight shooter. If something isn't practical, I don't like to talk about it, because, you know, theory can only take you so far. I feel like I've been grounded in the theory, but I really know how to make things work in law firms, and I have found the lawyers really respond to that. That, you know, I can kind of cut through what all of this marketing mumbo jumbo is and all the terms and everything else, and just get down to talking about what works and what doesn't and why. I do think having been a teacher helps me, because I really do like to educate, and I feel like at least half of what I do is education, in addition to trying to get things done, trying to teach people along the way how to make better decisions about what marketing efforts they engage in, things like that. So it's just sort of a combination of every day is different. You know, every firm is different. I never would have thought that. You know, when I came out of my law firm, I figured every firm was like that. And I've worked with 400 law firms now, and I swear every single one of them is different. And to me, that keeps me challenged, because I have to learn their cultures. I have to learn their practices. I mean, even after 20 years, I just recently started working with an immigration boutique, and I've never really worked with that practice before, so now I'm learning about, you know, where that business comes from and the most effective ways to market that, and that makes me more valuable to other clients.
You talked about, you know, different firms and how when you left the first firm you thought all firms were alike, and we talked earlier about benchmarking. When you look at the external marketplace through one of your audits, and you say, okay, maybe you go into a corporate finance or a healthcare firm, what are the things that you look at? I mean, do you look at a geographical area where there are other firms that in that practice area, what they charge, the pedigree of their lawyers, who their clients are? Are those the kind of things you do from a external benchmarking standpoint?
Exactly, yep. Usually what I'll do, it depends on, again, the process. What I always do is ask the lawyers in any particular practice, who are you competing with, you know, when you're going up for business, who are the lawyers that are making a short list, and sometimes they might be lawyers from small firms that are more like boutiques and or, you know, departments of large firms, whatever, and then we'll take a look at what those groups are doing. Now, the other piece that I like to do that I'm not always allowed to do is to ask that same question externally and to go to clients and ask clients or ask people who are maybe involved in some industry associations, who do they see as the players in a particular practice area or industry area. But, you know, short of that, we'll work with what the lawyers think they know in terms of who the competition is. Then we'll look at, you know, I recently did this with a real estate practice group, and we went to, you know, chambers. We went to the best lawyers. We went to see how many lawyers were certified in the real estate practice in, you know, their firm as well as the competitive firms, how many lawyers they have practicing in that area. You know, it's a little bit hard to get the right information, but we try. We have actually done some external surveys where people tell us what they're paying for their lawyers, so that's helpful. You know, and things like that. And sometimes it'll be how many have an LLM in tax or how many have backgrounds as accountants. And, you know, depending on the practice area, the pedigree, as you call it, information that you might want to track will change. But that's precisely what we try to do.
I'm sorry, did you say that sometimes you're not permitted to go speak to the firm's clients?
Correct, yep.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's sometimes there are two reasons. One is, and I understand them both, one is that it's more of a budget issue. They're trying to get kind of a quick and dirty, you know, let's at least get something going here. And the easiest way to do that is to just start with internal information, what the lawyers think they know about the market. And in fact, if the lawyers are doing their jobs, they have a pretty good sense of what's going on out there. And the second is fear. You know, there are a lot of lawyers that resist having people talk to their clients and even surveying them, you know, in some more kind of passive forms like a web survey or a written survey. And I think part of that is just, you know, not wanting to know what they say or worrying
fear.
About what they might say.
Fear of criticism?
A fear of criticism, fear of opening a can of worms. I mean, there's really a sense that, you know, if we ask that question, then they're going to start thinking about it, you know, like they wouldn't have been thinking about it already. So there's a lot of that.
Now, I need to ask you this. What do you really think of that? I mean, you said you understand it, but that sounds ridiculous. I mean, how are you going to really get to the client's motivations and understandings of how they feel about you unless someone asks?
Right. You know, as a marketing person, I understand that the very first step in doing any marketing is market research. If you don't know what clients think, what their motivations are, what their decision criteria are, whatever, you're not going to have a very effective marketing program. So, I mean, I absolutely believe it's fundamental. At the same time, I also, as I told you before, I'm a very practical person, and the fact is if I can't do it, we're going to try to do the best job without it. What I'll often try to do is pilot a program within a firm. We'll go and say, well, maybe this one practice group will allow us to talk to their clients, or maybe this one partner will allow us to talk to his clients. And you start to bring that information back to the firm and show people, you know, it's not so scary. In addition to learning some things we could do better, we also learned how happy the client is, and we also found out about this new business opportunity. So, you know, again, it's sort of an education process.
One of the things that Reed Smith, which is really a very large firm now, mm-hmm. has that's quite unique is this in-house general counsel who goes out and meets with the clients and obtains that feedback that you just spoke about.
Right. I saw that when she was brought in there. I thought that was fantastic. And a lot of firms will have their managing partner do this, or maybe the chairman of the executive committee. And I think that's a great role for someone in management to play for a couple of reasons. In addition to the information that you obtain, it's also a way to sort of institutionalize the client. And that, I have to say, is one of the issues that in the last year has probably been raised most often with me, is this whole succession planning for clients. I think for some reason it seems like a lot of firms are sort of hitting that stage where they're concerned about senior people either retiring or sort of phasing out or getting older, and some of their contemporaries are retiring from companies. And so I think any efforts that a firm can make to broaden the number of relationships and just make the client feel like they are a client of the firm as opposed to a particular person is really worthwhile.
Now, you've done a lot of audits, a lot of strategic marketing plans, and you've helped hundreds of law firms around the world. What is the biggest obstacle that you find in law firms actually implementing an effective marketing plan?
Oh, boy, where do I start? I think, well, of course, the biggest obstacle is that they don't have a plan. So that's the
biggest. Can't implement what you don't have, right?
Right. And, I mean, as simple as it sounds, you know, it's I couldn't even begin to tell you the number of examples that I could raise that are very embarrassing or even almost fatal examples of what can happen to firms when they operate without a plan. From a firm that represented medical manufacturers to bringing in a guy who sues medical device manufacturers, you know, for a construction boutique that decided to add a business lawyer and completely lost its distinctive competence and its marketing message, you know. I mean, I just think that is one of the hardest things is operating, because many times, again, they just resist it. Another thing I think it's an obstacle is that this is a generalization, but it's just been my experience. Lawyers don't like process. And this, you know, doing a plan really requires an investment in a process of looking back and analyzing our strengths and our weaknesses and where our business comes from and who our competition is and you know, kind of what people call navel gazing, you know, people who don't like to do that sort of thing, and then analysis. And to get a plan that's really not just a, you know, kind of gut, this is where I think we should go, you really have to engage in that analysis. And I have found that to be an obstacle too. And I think the third problem that I have is that a lot of the plans are not in the least bit strategic. They're internal. For example, the plan might be to fix the compensation system or to, you know, engage in a different kind of a recruiting process. And it's like, okay, those are important, you know, but they're not really externally focused. We want to talk about what kind of business do we want to get, and how do we want to position ourselves in the marketplace, and how are we going to attract these target clients. And so getting people to even understand what kind of information should be in there, I think, is an obstacle too. But I guess the biggest thing, if they have one, and it's a good one in terms of a plan, not getting it done is just the lack of accountability. Because organizations are so flat that it just gets diffused, and nobody's sort of, you know, staying on top of people saying, did you do it, did you do it, did you do it?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of an interesting statement about lawyers not liking process. But look, if you're a litigator, you have to prepare the case through discovery and all of that stuff, getting ready for trial. If you're a transactional lawyer, you have to, you know, think about all the things that can go wrong, making sure all the particular provisions are in there, which is all process oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also mentioned another interesting fact, which is, you know, if you implement the strategy, who owns it? And if the associate or even the partner gets a client, who owns that client? So you have a system where maybe the common good, like a sort of corporation or a normal business, is very difficult to measure.
Well, you know, compensation systems can be among the biggest obstacles that we have to getting anything done in marketing. It's not unusual to work with firms that have systems that reward just the originating attorney, in which case people have absolutely no incentive to try to cross-sell. People don't want to build relationships with, you know, contemporaries in that organization. It's hard to get some of those lawyers to the ones that are the originators to, especially if they have, for example, matter origination, where other people can get credit if they bring a new business from an existing client, then the originating lawyers, you know, hoard the clients and they don't want to introduce other people into the relationships. And so I think the firm compensation systems can be, you know, absolutely make or break your efforts to expand business.
I suspect you've seen a lot of change in your 20 years of doing this.
Yes, you know, in some cases, yes, in some cases, not so much. But I feel a little, you know, I feel like we've taken a lot of steps forward, but a lot of steps back at the same time.
And do you believe that because of the pace and the acceleration of change, that the law firms that get it, I mean, get the marketing, get the strategy, get the analytics that you've talked about, will succeed, and the ones that don't, won't?
I do, and I think that what has happened as firms, now we've gotten firms that have gotten larger. They obviously have a lot more resources, both human resources and financial. They are supporting marketing with technology and you know, different types of, as you mentioned, you know, ways to analyze information. And they are they aren't just moving ahead. I mean, they're leapfrogging, and they're bringing in people from outside the legal environment who have worked in businesses, and they're trying to learn how to apply business techniques, and they're sending people to, you know, business schools, or they're putting together curricula for, you know, training leaders and things like that. And so they're really starting to, I shouldn't just say starting to, they're really managing their firms much more like businesses, which we've been talking about for years, but they're really starting to do it. So I think once they're there, they're not going to go back, and others will have a hard time catching up if they don't make a similar investment.
Well, Sally, I could talk to you for hours because you're just a wealth of information. I want to thank you so much for being here today. Could you please tell my listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Certainly. Well, Schmidt Marketing is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Our website is www.schmidt-marketing.com. My phone number is 651-222-6102, and love to answer any follow-up questions anybody has.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you.
This has been another edition of the Rain Dancing Expert Audio Series, brought to you by FindCareerSuccess.com. Until next time.